Hello and welcome to Dialogues Dispatch, a podcast series from Google on technology and society. My name is Matt Britton, and for today's dispatch, I'm excited to connect again with Kate Garvey for a conversation on AI and how it can accelerate progress towards the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. Now, Kate's a founder of Project Everyone, which is an incredible effort aimed at bringing public awareness to the Sustainable Development Goals. Hello, Kate. Great to see you.
And you.
Now, you were there at the birth of the goals, and we're now halfway through the journey. So where do they come from and how are we doing?
Well, they come from an amazing global effort in 2014 and 2015, led by the now Deputy Secretary General, Amina Mohammed, who corralled across society a global community that chose 17 goals. When Richard Curtis, my co-founder, approached Gail Galli, my other co-founder, and I in 2014 to make the goals famous, we were quite concerned. 17 goals, it does not slip off the tongue. Mm-hmm. However, we embraced them and decided the first thing we needed to do was to give them a brand. And through working with some great people, we came up with the goals wheel.
The multicolored wheel,
the 17 icons, the shortened names, and the symbols, in order that they became more recognisable. And indeed, in 2016, after they were launched, I do remember the sort of push to bring it to business communities and others, and the badge helped. And the simplification of it helped. So I think in 2014, 2015, Project Everyone was set up really as a campaign to make the goals famous. And we tried to reach every single person on the planet. We failed. However, 3 billion people were reached by basically working with people like yourselves, Google and others, whether it be your homepage promotion, whether it be telecoms sending text messages, whether it be radio stations doing shows. We did have the power of Beyonce through a big Global Citizen concert, and we did do a huge launch at the United Nations with Shakira and many others. The Pope helped. So we used every type of person with great reach or brands that had the reach, and that was wonderful. However, it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And so we at Project Everyone decided that we would continue to work with UN and big stakeholders in the goals to keep those goals prominent, particularly with decision makers, with civil society, with business. So I think from a brand perspective, it has become very well known in a certain set of audiences.
Right. So you had serious, well thought through goals that came out of the Millennium Goals, I think, and then you made them famous. And you set a timeline, and we're at half time in the match, right? So you had a 14 year timeline to try to achieve these goals. So how are we doing at half time?
So we are down at half time. Only 15% of the goals are on track. We've actually created a set of cards to demonstrate where we are on each goal with the help of Data Commons. Data is so important in tracking the goals, obviously. So Google's Data Commons and One.org. With Project Everyone, I've come together to sort of analyze where we are on the goals. And yeah, it's not a great score. However, we are using the sporting analogy to try and corral people. And any match is won in the second half. So we need to look at what the game changers are. Who are the star players we need to bring in order to get us back on track?
And let's spend a moment on why we're behind. So I guess if I think about the last 7 years, it's been a pretty bumpy several years geopolitically, global pandemic.
And various, you know, Russia, Ukraine, the horrific situation in Israel, Gaza. So lots and lots of challenges in the way. But why are we behind in so many places?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you take goal three, it's 2024 and still 3 million children are not reaching their first birthday. If you take maternal health, more women are dying in childbirth than they did 10 years ago. You mentioned the Millennium Development Goals, which we worked on. That goal five, maternal mortality, we had a target there that we actually managed in the last 5 years to really inject a lot of cash, a lot of innovation, a lot of political will and on the ground support in order that that did catch up from being one of the least likely to be achieved. That finance has slowed down.
Yeah.
Innovations are there, particularly in maternal health, and AI plays a big role in that. The solutions are there. They're simple innovations, but they're not being implemented enough on the ground through lack of money, through some of the instabilities that you've talked about, the three C's, COVID, climate, and I was going to say cost of living, but it's conflict, really.
That's causing a cost of living crisis.
Correct. Yeah. However, there is optimism. Despite the travesty that 3 million children are not reaching their first birthday, actually the trajectory is going in the right direction. 133 countries in 2021 were getting to their targets needed. So we know that with health innovations, vaccinations, etc., we are improving the life expectancy of children, and that is so crucial. But so much more needs to be done.
We want to come on and talk a bit about science and technology as a kind of accelerant for these goals. You mentioned the role of technology in sort of sourcing and then making famous the goals.
Yeah.
Also, data commons in tracking. This is a project. One of our engineers at Google, who worked really originally on search, wanted to try to make it as easy to search data as it is to search the web. And that's really the inception of data commons. So we work with lots of organizations, including the UN and many others, to put data sets online, and then with AI on top of them, make it possible, you know, in a very human, natural language way, to pull out insights from those data. So compare this with that. How does A correlate with B, and so on? And that's a real resource which we're continuing to invest in as a free resource.
There is a lot of data out there, but it's held in very complicated forms.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the best things that we found working with Data Commons is the accessibility of it. And that is driven by AI. So I think it's not just about getting the data, it's then allowing people to access it in an easier format.
Yeah.
And I think Data Commons is really helping us drive that. We use these things creatively. We've created a pack of cards. We developed a pavilion inside the UN at September at the halfway mark, which Data Commons drove the stats that we used and portrayed there. This was all done in real time. And that is so important in both this creative capacity and communication capacity, but also on the ground.
So many of the things we need to achieve are complicated targets. So you've got a real talent for taking the complex, the 17 goals, and making it clear and simple for people.
Definitely. And it's how to motivate people. That's why we like the sporting analogy.
Yeah.
You know, you want people to imagine winning. You want people to remember some of the key football matches, soccer matches that you may have watched where you can be down at halftime, but you can pull back. So I think that is important to motivate people and to point to the optimism because it's out there.
Yes, I've been in many races. I was a rower when I was behind at halfway, and closing that gap and coming through in the second half is painful. And I guess it's going to be a bit tough for us to raise our game in this effort. Now, but you did also in your playing cards, I noticed you've got three cards about sort of accelerants or things that are going to help in the second half of the match. So tell us what those are.
Yeah, so we're calling them star players, and they're the game changers for the goals. So they are AI and innovation, women's power, and finance, and the reform needed of the financial institutions. And I would love to talk to you about the AI part of it. I'm learning a lot more about how AI can help, not just in the future, but in real time, and how it's beginning already to help accelerate goals, particularly in health, education, and many other things. I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's one of the things I'm most excited about. You know, I think in the public consciousness, you know, AI is almost synonymous with chatbots at the moment. Mm-hmm. But actually, we've been working with AI for a lot longer period at Google. It's powered search. But the things I'm most excited about here are some of the work our team at Google DeepMind has been doing on AI and science.
Yeah.
So if I think about the goals, whether it's food security, goal number two, which is zero hunger, or goal number three, which is health and well-being, there are breakthroughs that are possible now.
Yeah, definitely. And we work with the Gates Foundation on a goal-driven campaign and event called Goalkeepers. And we talked a lot about maternal health, these game changers through AI and innovation. I was really impressed to hear about how on a mobile phone, you can start to use ultrasound for scans ahead of childbirth.
Yeah, and there are an array of things we're seeing breakthroughs on in health technology particularly. I think one I'd like to talk about is AlphaFold.
Yes.
People may have heard about that. So this is, for non-scientists like you and I, understanding the 3D structure of a protein is a key part of developing vaccines and disease research. Science reckons there are over 200 million proteins. And we had about 175,000 where through painful work, it used to take a PhD student, their entire PhD, to get a 3D structure through sort of microscopy and inspection. So about 175,000 had been modeled. AlphaFold was able, using AI, to model nearly all 200 million known to science in a matter of months. That's a billion years of progress. And if you think about that, what's the PhD student then going to do? Well, you're looking at a rare disease where you were never going to get funding for all of the research needed to get to the protein structures. Suddenly you start with a database.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is I'm just looking at the latest report we've just seen on AlphaFold use on food security. It's the case that 40% of crops were lost last year to pests and diseases. And now over 1,100 papers have cited AlphaFold in people's research working on reducing that issue.
Wow.
So think about some of these things and what's possible now with these breakthroughs. It's really exciting.
I remember when I first started working in campaigning for global health initiatives, it was very much at the HIV turning point of people recognizing it, people investing in it, people finding the solutions for it. And I found a lot of my contemporaries went into that sphere because it had attention and it had money and it had some exciting innovations to come out of it. They could see that. I can see that change happening now, I think, with AlphaFold, with what DeepMind, Google DeepMind's doing, and many others, that it's going to attract a new set of people in. And I think that is where you really can turn things around.
Absolutely.
We were blown away. I remember it was just as we were emerging from the pandemic and we launched AlphaFold, the database. It was sort of 3 months in, and already we'd seen that nearly a million researchers were using it. And actually, the latest report, which is just now, said 1.6 million users, over 5 million protein structures have been viewed, and over 18,000 citations for AlphaFold. So just in an incredibly short period, exactly as you say, more people are coming forward. You're just lowering the barriers, lowering the costs, and increasing the speed towards solutions. And whether it's in food security or health and well-being or other areas of the goals, I think we'll see more of this happening. And that's one of the reasons we're keen to partner deeply with you to understand how to channel those efforts.
Definitely. And I think, look, there are a lot of goals, 17 of them. And I think that's why if we can corral the efforts of people around the cross-cutting initiatives, whatever you want to call them, AI and innovation, finance, women's power, it will exponentially help all of the goals. I was really interested to hear about your weather predictions coming out of Google DeepMind, because it makes such a difference if people can predict the weather 7 days in advance rather than one.
We've got a team in Tel Aviv, actually, who work on flood forecasting and made their work available globally. And I think it's something like 500 million people who are at risk of flooding. And we can now give up to 7 days warning of likely floods, which gives a huge difference in terms of your ability to kind of clear people away and protect people's worlds.
That's amazing. And I suspect also the tools in which you use are easier to get difficult places.
Yeah, exactly. So what you want to be able to do, obviously, is use these tools using kind of mobile devices, ideally. One of the other reasons that technology is an accelerant to these goals now is because we've gone from minority access to the World Wide Web to majority.
Correct.
And, you know, the next couple of billion people will complete everyone being online, and that suddenly changes access.
We've been talking about so many upsides of AI, but there are risks. And obviously, in order for the goals to be achieved, no one can be left behind. And there is a fear about how AI can be equitable. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, actually, we just published a report where we surveyed 17,000 people in 17 different countries to understand their attitudes to AI. And interestingly, the vast majority of people across countries are positive about the likely impact AI will have on their lives over the next few years. But they all want to see governments and tech companies working together to ensure that AI is safe and that is available and accessible to everyone. And I think that's one of the key things that Google, our sort of mantra around this, is being bold, you know, really going after the big innovations, being responsible, making sure that we are doing everything we can to ensure the technology is used for good and we protect against harmful uses, and doing that together. You know, it's not up to us to decide how the technology should look. We need a dialogue with organizations like yours, with civil society, with governments, with experts, to understand how we can land this technology in a way that's socially responsible.
And you're doing this with the UN as well. Tell us a little more about that.
Because I think it's so clear that AI is a transformative technology and it's developing so fast, it's become absolutely the subject of discussion and debate. You know, how do we understand what these models can do? How do we understand how bad actors might do with them and how we protect against them? And working with organizations like the UN, we've made commitments at the White House. It was recently an AI safety summit hosted in Bletchley Park in the UK, brought together everyone from China, from the US, from the EU and other countries to look at how we harness AI for good. So I think we're at the early stages. The good news is, I think the risks are clear. Some of them may be overestimated or underestimated, but we have to work together. And I think part of that's about publishing what you're doing and trying to be transparent about the risks of technology. Part of it is making sure that we're innovating at pace because, you know, bad actors will be doing that too.
Yeah. And talking of that, 4 billion people are going to be voting this year, more than ever before, elections in over 60 countries. Having worked in politics, I can understand how things can derail elections. What are your fears and your counterbalances to the potential there?
Absolutely. We have a team of people who work on election integrity for every kind of major election around the world. And so trying to ensure that everyone understands how to use the tools that we have to fight misinformation is really important. And if you think about it, by the way, misinformation predates technology. It's been there for as long as time has. What's different, I think, in recent years with social media has been the ability for anyone to disseminate things really fast without the intermediary of a publisher. And now I think with generative AI, that people can produce things that look even more real. So those are kind of two new aspects of the problem. It's also not true that all synthetic content is bad and all human content is good, right? So we need to be sort of nuanced in this. So how we work on this is we try to work with election authorities, campaigning parties, governments. We restrict our advertising policies so that it's transparent to people who's spending money on what kind of advertising campaigns. And then absolutely, we work closely with publishers, independent fact-checking organizations. Actually, for Google, you know, not being a social media company, typically people will, they see something online and they're not sure about it, they may well come to search. Mm-hmm. And that's where making sure that respected journalism and quality content can be there to sort of help them to understand what's going on. So big responsibility. You're absolutely right. Big, big, big year for democracy this year. And I think it's important that technology plays its part in preserving election integrity.
100%.
So we're at halftime. We're down, but we talked about some of the ways in which star players might come onto the pitch and help us. What would you like people listening to our conversation to be doing next?
So it's so important that everyone plays their part. And I do think over the next couple of years, we're going to see that possibility, one, in these elections, that people should absolutely vote when they can. Two, in terms of looking to the five-year countdown, I do think 2025 to 2030, that's the deadline. You've got to hold people accountable. You've got to hold feet to the fire and being really aware of the role you can play as a citizen at work, in your homes, at school. That is so important. We do have programs to try and reach more people to sort of involve younger people. I think that is important. We have something called the World's Largest Lesson, and it's in over 100 countries. And so many children know about the girls, and they're now becoming of age. You know, they will be voting in the next election. They all know the girls. They've grown up with them. So making sure that world leaders are held accountable to the girls as they go to the polls is going to be super important. So Matt, tell us what you are hopeful about over the next 7 years and how you think Google can play a role within this.
Yeah, look, I'm a technology optimist. And I really think we're on the cusp of some major scientific breakthroughs that we talked about. I think, though, you know, innovation's a team sport, to use your sporting metaphor. And, you know, I've been at Google now 17 years. And what I've learned is that, you know, being bold and optimistic about what technology can do, being realistic about managing the risks. But the most fundamental thing is the partnership between governments, NGOs, tech companies, but actually also with communities. Because if governments and technology and communities work together, I think we can achieve those goals. We can push on in the second half and make a real difference. It's going to take all of us collaborating to win the game.
Amazing.
Kate Garvey, founder of Project Everyone, thank you.
Thank you.